Before we get started, I have to ask this question. How many people here have no idea what Azure Mobile Services is? Okay, not too many. That's good. I'm going to give like a 1 second on what Azure Mobile Services is, and then we're going to dive in and get busy. My name is Glenn Block. I work on the Windows Azure team. I was very involved in our Node.js story for enabling Node.js on Windows Azure and on the Windows platform. And the last year, I've been working on the Azure Mobile Services team as well, which is actually a service that we deliver in Windows Azure that runs on Node.js. And so today, what we're going to be really focusing on is, hey, it runs on Node.js. What can we do with it from a Node perspective? Can we actually take advantage of those Node capabilities? Now, we designed Azure Mobile Services so that you don't have to be a Node expert. But because it is Node, you can actually grow and do a lot of things based on the fact that the runtime is actually running in Node. So there are a bunch of Node modules that are pre-installed. We're going to talk about those and show some scenarios for using those. We've added some really cool features for taking your application and exposing it as a Git repo, which allows you to do some really cool stuff, work outside the portal. We'll get into that, and use custom NPM modules, meaning going beyond the whitelist of modules that we include in the box and allowing you to download and use whatever other modules are available in the NPM registry for extended scenarios. And I'm going to show you some of those scenarios just to get you guys thinking about what you can do with mobile services beyond the basics. And I'll talk a little bit about what's coming in the future. So what is mobile services? This is like the 30-second overview. Mobile services gives you a backend for your mobile application that lives in the cloud. So if you're a client-side developer or a mobile developer who's building apps today on their mobile device, and we support all these different platforms, iOS, Android, Windows 8, Windows Phone, then as soon as you try to take that application and scale that out, you need to think about where data is going to be stored. You need to think about identity, dealing with things like Twitter and Facebook. And you need to deal with things like push notifications, which require you to have a server. So as soon as you get out of the most basic mobile apps, other than like maybe local games or something like that, and even a game might have a leaderboard that needs to be stored somewhere, you start to need a place to put that stuff. And so conventionally, the way that's done is you become a server-side developer. You start using a stack like ASP.NET or Ruby on Rails or even Node.js yourself, and you become this server-side developer. Mobile services is really designed so that you don't have to become a server-side developer. It will give you a backend. It will make it really easy for you to say, here's the kind of data I want to store. Here's the kind of authentication I want to do. I want to do push. It will give you a seat for doing business logic that you don't want to do on the client. So that is mobile services at a high level in a nutshell. And now we're going to start to dig in deeper and see what you can do with it. So mobile services has a bunch of built-in modules. Now, modules are in Node, or there's this concept of a module. Node is a very small runtime. It's a very small core. Everything else becomes a module. And so what we've done with mobile services is we've included a bunch of them out of the box that you can use within your scripts. Part of the reason we have this whitelist of modules, because people may ask, well, now that you have NPM support or that you can use Git, why even have these modules built in? Some of them were needed just as part of the runtime itself. Others were needed because originally we didn't have that Git feature, and that feature is still actually in preview. But at one point, we didn't even have it in preview, but we wanted to provide people a way to do some advanced things like working with Azure Table Storage. So we added these built-in modules. And here's a list of some of them. Now, the ones that are yellow, so APNS, dpush is for Google push, Google notification messaging, WNS, MPNS. Those modules are all built in, and that's why they're highlighted in yellow. And you don't actually have to require them. Like, the standard way that you use a Node module is you would say, you know, var HTTP equals require parentheses single quote HTTP. These are actually offered to you right off of the mobile service, so you don't actually have to require them. But some of these other modules, like SAX and XML to JS. XML to JS, now a lot of people in the Node community, they don't think XML is cool, but there are still systems out there that use XML. So what XML to JS will do is it will allow you to take an XML graph and convert that into a JSON object model, and so you can work with it. And it's very convenient. It has some conventions of how it will map attributes and things like that, but it's very useful. And then SAX is an XML parser. It's just a simple XML parser. We have Pusher. How many people here have heard of the Pusher service? So Pusher is a really cool service that allows you to do WebSockets. It allows the Pusher service to act almost as like a broker, where a browser talks to the Pusher service with a persistent WebSocket. And this is interesting for Azure Mobile Services, because Azure Mobile Services today doesn't actually support WebSockets directly, but we support Pusher. And within Windows Azure, if you go into the Azure Store, which I'm going to just show you what that looks like. So if I log in to the Windows Azure portal, just take a second, you'll see that we actually have add-ons, and one of those add-ons is Pusher. So let's say I have a browser application that's talking to my mobile service, and I want to be able to push notifications out to that browser app. I can use the Pusher service to do that for me, where the browser client will connect to the Pusher service. They have a JavaScript library. And then from my mobile service, I can require the Pusher module and use it. So you'll see here that in my add-ons for Windows Azure, and this is the Azure portal, you can see that I've provisioned a Pusher service. And when I do that, if I click on the connection info, it will basically give me this key information and secret and app ID. And I can then use that within my Azure Mobile scripts. And we actually have a whole bunch of documentation on how to do that. So if you go to windowsazure.com, we have a mobile dev center. So you can go to documentation, and you can go to mobile services. And I believe we have an article here. Somewhere we have an article on Pusher. This is showing how to use the native push. But we actually do support Pusher as well as one of those built-in modules. Not that one. Let me close that. OK, so we also have the request module built in. The request module is useful if you want to make HTTP requests out. So in one of your scripts running on the back end, you want to go and call out to some HTTP API. Could be your own, could be Twitter, could be Facebook. You can use the request module, which has support also for OAuth. So it can actually go and authenticate against those services. And you can do all of this right within the portal. You don't have to basically use Git or use any kind of special editor. So I'm going to show you what that looks like now. So first I'll just open a very basic mobile service. Anyone who's seen mobile services, this will look pretty familiar. This is kind of the getting started application for mobile services. So I can add an item. What we saw right there is I just got a push notification. That's not actually using Pusher, but that is using the WNS module that we have built into mobile services to do the push. If I wanted to also have this support a browser, I wouldn't use native push. I would use something like using the Pusher service to do that push for me. But it gives you a very similar feel. With Pusher, you have a channel, and you can push messages, and then the client can listen to the messages that it's interested in. So let's take a look and see what that would look like on the back end. Come on. This is a Mac in Windows clothing. All right. So if I go back into the portal, you can see that I have a set of mobile services. And one of those is this GB to-do list that we're looking at now, which you saw when I ran that, I got a push notification. So if we click on data, we see that I have these two tables. So in mobile service, your data is stored in tables. And you can see that I have a to-do item table and a channel table. So if I go into the to-do item table, we can take a look at the script. So here's the to-do items. And here is the insert script. So we'll talk a little bit about what this means a little bit later. But you can see here that on this insert script, I put the code that I wanted to run in this success callback. And the idea of that is that this is a table that is going to update, it's going to update a SQL table on the back end. And I don't want to send the notification unless that update succeeded. Let's say somebody violated a constraint in the database or something like that. I don't want to send a notification to them to tell them it successfully was added. So what mobile services allows you to do is when you call this request.execute, which tells mobile services, go ahead and commit to the database, I can pass it an object. I'm passing it a JSON object here that has a success property on it that has a callback. And then we'll call that only when the execution has successfully completed. So this way, that push notification is only going to get fired if it successfully persisted to the database. So if I look at send notification, that's just a JavaScript function. But you'll see that what it's doing is, so first, it's accessing the channel table. And it wants to, it's basically looking up against the channel table so it can find the channel that it's going to actually push on. This is a very simple implementation right here. Because what it's going to do is, let's say there were multiple devices connected. Each of them have their own channel. The client sends that information, and that gets persisted in the channel table. And this does like a pub sub. It basically broadcasts to all of them to say, hey, this item was created. Now, here you can see that I'm accessing the push object. And I'm using the WNS module to send a toast image and text. I'm passing it the channel URI. I'm passing it the image. That image was one of our coworkers, Nathan Totten. And I'm passing it some text. So I can do all of this right from the portal. And this is using a built-in module. Anyone have any questions on this example? OK. So we can also, we'll just move over here. We can also utilize built-in modules to work with creating shared access signatures, which is a feature of blob of our storage. So in Windows Azure, we have storage services, and one of those is blob storage. And blob storage allows me to upload a document or retrieve a document. And with shared access signatures, what I can do is have my application give a URL to the application, to the client, that gives them a period of time, a dedicated URL that they can use to upload that document. But that will expire. So this way, and it only gets to be used once. So the idea, it's almost like a token that I'm giving the client. I'm saying, OK, for this period of time, this will allow you to upload this document to this place. And then that expires. So we actually have built in the Azure module. Actually, it's not on the list, but it should be. And the Azure module is the Azure SDK for Node. So it allows you to access table storage, blob storage, service bus. You can access queues as well. And it has a bunch of other stuff. So let's take a look at an example of actually very loud. Hello? Can you hear me? Okay. Let's take a look at an example of using the blob store. So I have another project here called My Pictures. And the idea of My Pictures is it's a place to upload photos. And it utilizes Windows Azure Blob Store. So you can see here's an image. The thumbnail was broken on this other one, but we'll go upload one. So I can go upload a picture. I can browse that picture. I'll choose, let's see, which is the one that I want. Okay, let me just browse. There's a particular one I want. So, let's see here. There we go. That's the one I want. So this is actually an image of me about to jump off your lovely sky tower. So you can see that what it did is it actually was able to upload that image, and I can drill into the thumbnail. It created a thumbnail. It should take a couple of seconds to get the full image. So the client is actually doing the upload of the image. It's not the server, because that would be expensive to send the image to the server to then have it upload the image. But the client needs to have permission and a place to put that image. And so we're using shared access signatures, so this way, this is not just open publicly where anybody can grab it and use it. And shared access signatures have an expiration. So I'm just going to jump in and I'll show you the app and how we applied the shared access signature. So this will be a different app. It's the GBlock Pick service. And under data, I have two tables for this app. I have an album table, which stores information about albums, and I have a picture table, which stores information about images. But the picture table actually uses a script. And what that script is doing is it is requiring the Azure module. I'm passing in my credentials, which I will have to reset after this talk because they're showing. Well, they're not completely showing, unless I scroll over. Woo! it's very easy to change the keys, so I'm not too worried. Now what I'm doing is I am creating the blob service. So this is a passive operation that basically allows me to pass credentials to set up to be able to interact with blob storage. So I've passed in my credentials. And now I'm doing this create container if not exists. Now why we have methods like this is just to make life easier. When you start to work with Node, you notice right away that there's a lot of async going on. Everything is async. So you start having callbacks all over the place. So to do something like this, if you wanted to first, you would have to first check to see if the container exists. And then if the container doesn't exist, you would go and create it. Or you would continue. And that would be nesting of callbacks. So you'll notice when you look at our Azure SDK that we've created a bunch of convenience methods like this one that will basically say, given a container name, I'll create it if it's not there. Otherwise, I'll just continue. And that's why we have this here. And so now what I'm doing is I'm setting up my shared access signature. So I'm passing it permissions that says that this person is just going to be able to write. They will not be able to read. I'm passing it the URL, and I'm passing it, I'm using this expiration function we have now. Well, we've had expiry from the beginning on our policy object, but we now have some nice little helper methods like this one that says, hey, I want to allow this URL to be usable for 30 minutes. After 30 minutes, it will expire, or if someone uses it. And then the next thing I'm doing is just updating the URL information that I get back from the using the shared access policy. So what this getBlobURL is going to do is it's going to say, it's just going to give me back a URL that I can then pass back to the client and say, use this to go and store that blob. So it's pretty straightforward. So that is using the Azure module to talk to Blob. Table storage is very similar. There's no container, but you have a table object. You get to work with creating tables and then interacting with those tables. Very similar kind of pattern. Okay, so this is just giving you a notion of some of the things you can do with the modules that are built in. We'll go one further, and let's look at email. So a common pattern is, hey, like something's happened, some type of data or trigger, and you want to send an email. Or maybe somebody placed an order, and you want to send an email to the whoever the user is. Or maybe something suspicious is going on, and you've detected that within your server logic based on the data, and you want to send an email to like ops team or something to notify them. We actually have a lot of ops mobile services that we deploy. We basically use mobile services to monitor itself. So we run through lots of different mobile services that go out there and gather different types of data. So this is an example of where that could be used, but it could also definitely be used for just communicating with clients. So the example we were looking at before actually sends an email as well. And as a matter of fact, if I log in, assuming I remember the password, if I log into Outlook.com, it's not that one. Actually, let me just take a second. Okay. To see if I remember what I put here. I may not be getting in because I may have forgotten my password, but let's see. No. I don't even know if I remember my account. All right, well, we'll move on. But I'm going to show you where it actually sends the mail. I accidentally logged out, and I don't remember what the account is. Kill me. All right. I'll be able to see the account when I check the script, because it's got to send it somewhere. So maybe I'll be able to figure it out. So if we go back to our GB to-do list and we look at the to-do item, you'll see that it is also sending an email. And this, I have required the SendGrid module. So whereas for push, I didn't require anything because of the fact that it's already built in as a push object, for SendGrid, I actually have to require it. So I'm basically requiring SendGrid.SendGrid, getting the SendGrid object. And then I am newing up the SendGrid object and passing it the credentials. So just like I created the pusher service in the store, I can also create a SendGrid service that will do blast emails. Oh yeah, so I did get the email name right. I just got the password wrong. So you can see here that I'm calling SendGrid.send, gblockdemo@outlook.com, and I'm passing it the to-do item. And what this will do is blast an email to that email address. But I can also, using SendGrid, I can do blasts not just to a single account, but to many, many accounts. And this was just for illustration. All right, so we've covered pretty much a lot of the core common modules. Let's talk about source control. So the portal is really great for getting going. I'm really excited that we have the portal, because when somebody wants to play with mobile services, the first time, they have a really easy experience, and you can write basic scripts real simply in the portal, and even a little bit more sophisticated. Everything we've shown up until now can easily be done in the portal. But there's a couple of problems. The first problem is, what happens if accidentally the script gets overwritten? or you make a mistake. There's no rollback. Whoever is the last one to edit that, that's it. So you better hope you've copy-pasted it somewhere, which you don't really want to do. The portal as an editor is also okay, but there's lots of really sophisticated text editors out there. So the portal's great for simple stuff, but eventually you might want to use something else. You might want to use one of the popular text editors like Sublime Text or Emacs or Vim or Notepad++ or any of those editors that are out there. Another challenge is around team collaboration. Because again, whoever edits that script last, they won. There's no way to do any kind of deltas or anything like that, or hey, somebody else already made an edit. So there's no real good team collaboration story. And there's no good fail-safe. If things get screwed up, they just get screwed up. So this is why we've opened up the ability to enable source control. And if you enable source control, you can use Git and pull down all the files that today are currently living in the portal. But the other advantage is today in the portal, you're restricted to working within one file. Like when you do an insert script, you're in one file. Well, that file is going to get really unwieldy over time. And what if you want to reuse certain logic across multiple files? You have no real way to do that in the portal. But once you go to source control, you now have the ability to modularize your application. So it makes it much more easy to have reuse across your different applications and within the application. And the last thing it gives you, which is the main reason I wanted to do this talk, is access to use custom, any NPM module that's available of the 40,000 that are out there in the registry. You can now pull those into your applications, and that opens up a ton of really advanced type scenarios. So that is source control. So how do we enable source control? What we do is we go to our service, and in the dashboard of our service, you'll see a link to enable source control. Now, I've already enabled source control, but if you click that link on any new mobile service, you'll actually see that there's this link that you can use to enable source control. Once you do that, if you go to the Configure tab, you'll actually get a Git URL. And so that Git URL is going to allow you to use Git, either the GUI or the command line tools, to pull down that repo, make modifications, push them. And I'm going to show you this right now. We also have this deployment trigger URL. So the deployment trigger URL allows you to use GitHub. If you want to use GitHub and have a private repo or even a public repo on GitHub and say that whenever code is pushed to that repo, that's going to then get propagated to your mobile service, then what you have to do is go into GitHub and add what's called a webhook, which you can do very easily from the configuration of your repo. And then you just drop this URL in, and every time anyone deploys to that particular repo, automatically that change will get picked up, and it will get pulled into your mobile service. So it's really, really nice. So I've got a bunch that I've done that with, and I'll show you what we can do now that we have that capability. If anyone ever sees the name Zumo, by the way, that is a code name for Azure Mobile Services. So the Zumo is like Azure Mobile. That's what that means if you ever hear me or anybody else use it. Bit of trivia for you. All right, so let me close this. Oh, that's the wrong one. Hold on a second here. Let me just clone that repo. So I will take this URL here. Close this. do one other thing here. Start. Okay, good. All right, so I'm in the Zumo folder. I'm going to clone that repo. And then it's going to ask me for my credentials. So my username is gblock, my password. Let me do that again. Okay, let's try that again. Git clone. I have one of these wacky passwords. We want you to have lowercase, uppercase, and it's just kind of, it's easy to get wrong, the one that I use. Okay, so it just pulled in my source, and if we jump over here, we should see, this is Sublime Text, by the way, which is the text editor that I like to use. We can see that I have a service folder here. Can you guys see that over there on the left? The text will be much bigger. And you can see that I got a bunch of subfolders. So I have a table subfolder, and I have an API subfolder. And I have scheduler, and I have shared. So APIs are a new feature of Windows Azure Mobile Services. And the idea of APIs is you just want to have something that's exposed over HTTP. But it's not necessarily a table. It doesn't have to persist to the database. So right now, it's not doing anything. It's just doing a hello world. But for example, imagine I wanted that service, we'll just call it test, to give me back a GUID. So it turns out that in mobile services, well, in Node, there's no built-in way to create a GUID. This was an interesting realization for me the first time I started doing Node development. It's just not part of the Node core. It's not one of the primitives. But there is a module called Node UUID that you can use for generating GUIDs. So what I can do now is I can install the Node UUID module, use it from within my script, and then I could have an API exposed, for example, that lets me do create GUIDs. So let's do that. So the first thing I'm going to do is if I go into my to-do list app, you'll see that I have this API defined. And I'm going to go into the permissions tab. And right now, it only allows authenticated users. I was messing with this before. But I want to open it up so I can just hit it in the browser. So anytime you want to be able to, while you're testing or developing, or you want to make an API that's read-only for everybody, or you know, you could make it not just read-only, but read-only would be common, you just set this to everyone. If you set it to anybody with the application key, they're going to have to pass a custom header, and you can't do that when you're just basically invoking from the browser. So I'm going to set this to everyone. But I'm going to leave it as test. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go install the Node UUID module. Now the way to do this, there's a proper way to do this, and I'm going to show you what it is. So you go into your app. And when you get into your app, you see this service folder. In the service folder is the right place to do your install for all your modules. And the reason for that is, if you do that, the Node modules folder will appear in the service folder, and Node automatically walks the parent hierarchy to find modules if it doesn't find them locally. So anything that you install under service will be available to all of your scripts within your app. So I'm just going to say npm install node UUID, and it has now done my install, which is under my node modules folder. If I do an ls node modules, you'll see that there's a node UUID there. So what I'm going to do here is I want to use this so that every time the get is called, it's going to return the GUID. So up here, I could require node UUID. And then if I head over to the GitHub page for this, and most node modules, like 99.9% of them, they exist on GitHub. So you can see the syntax that I can use here. So I can use UUID.v1, and it will generate for me a time-based GUID. I probably wouldn't do this for my GUID service, but might as well make it nice and user-friendly. So I'll say UUID.v1. And that should work. Now, this is very important. So I've made changes to the script, but the module doesn't yet exist in my repo. When you push to mobile services, you have to include the module. So the way that you do this is you do a git add. Let's just clear this. And then you do git commit. Adding node UUID. And then I'm going to do a push. So we can see that it picked up the node UUID module. Origin. It's going to prompt me for my Git credentials. And my crazy password. And now it's going to push this live. Oh. I think I hit this before. I might have to create a new one. I think this one is git pull origin master. Okay, let's try that again. Okay, so it's pushed it. It's now live. And so first off, if we go to the portal, it should still show us our changes. So if I go back to the script, I should see the updated script. I won't see the node modules folder. Yeah, there we go. Bar UUID equals require node UUID. So now to hit this particular service, what I do is I can go in my browser, and this is, what is it, GB to-do item, API test. I lose my wireless. Let me go back here and see. GB to-do list. That's why. That error is really throws you off. Okay. API. Why didn't it accept it? What was this? Ah, I put it on post. That was dumb. But I'm glad I got great people in the audience who could point out that faux pas. All right, so that one I don't even have to go through Git. I can just do it here. So you can round trip between the two of them fine, but you'll only see the top level script. Let me just close something for a second. There we go. So we got our GUID. But in the same way, you can use any other module that's out there. So we're going to go into some more detailed scenarios in a minute. But just to summarize about Git and source control, portal's great for simple things, but you might need something more. These are all the things that source control is going to give you, right? You'll have a local repo where you can work. You can use whatever text editor you want. You saw that I was doing things with Sublime. It gives you more control, actually. You can organize your files. In the same way that I'm requiring modules, I can also split out common JavaScript functions into separate files, and I can just require those. And I can use .slash to require a file that's in the same folder, and I can use relative paths if I want to refer to other folders within my service directory. I can't go above service, by the way. So the other reason it's important, if you do install modules, do not go above service, because it will never show up. You'll never get access to it. You'll never see it. So it's a really, really nice feature. So this is the steps that you have to go through to enable Git. You basically enable Git for your mobile service, clone, author, push. You can use the Git command line tools. You can use the Git GUI stuff, or you can use GitHub for Windows. Any of those tools will work. So now let's get to the meat of it. So we just saw one example of doing Node UUID as a simple example of using the repo. But we can do lots of other things. Like Windows Azure now has the ability to provision MongoDB as a service. We let you say, hey, I want to get a MongoDB instance. I don't want to manage it. I don't want to set up the VM. The same way I was able to do Pusher and SendGrid, I can do MongoDB. Redis, we don't yet support as a service, but that is coming. But you can easily create, using our VM depot and our command line tools, a Redis VM that can be up and running in a few minutes. And there's a Redis module that you can use within NPM that will allow you to talk to Redis. Now, if you're not familiar with Redis, Redis is a really cool in-memory cache. I'm going to show you what you can do with it. And you can do other things. Like, one of the things that people really like about Node is, because it's JavaScript, you can actually execute client-level JavaScript on the server. So you can share the logic between the two. And one of the things that has become really popular is actually parsing web pages. So there's a module called NOM that will allow you to take a static HTML and parse it. And you can parse that right within your script by including that module. And the last thing that you can do, as far as all the other modules that are out there, is we have a default version of the Azure module that we ship in the box. And today, we don't update that very frequently. As a matter of fact, we really never update it because we don't want anybody's scripts to break. But you can actually replace that. You can install the latest version of the Azure module into your services folder, and then you'll be able to access the latest and greatest. And the Azure module ships weekly or biweekly, so there's lots of new updates coming in there that are not available yet in the box for mobile services. So I'm going to show you some of these. These I'm not going to create from scratch because they're already deployed, but I'm going to show you how they work, and we'll talk about the scenario. I think we have about 15 minutes, so that is right on time. So let's start off with MongoDB. So I actually have an app, a Node app, running in Azure websites talking to a Mongo database. That's not it. DB Mongo.azurewebsites.net. I think that's it. Let's just wait and see. There we go. So, clean up my room. Oh, somebody else logged in on this. All right, so I'm going to check these off and update them. And now I'm going to add a new item, which is going to be show the Mongo API demo. Okay, so I've got a Mongo instance in Azure. I've now got a Node app. This is not a mobile service. A Node app deployed as a website for being able to modify my to-do list. But imagine I want to use mobile services to also be able to talk to this to-do list. So mobile services allows me to create APIs. So I could imagine going in and creating an API that uses the Mongo driver to talk directly to the same Mongo instance. Of course, yes, I could have exposed the API from my Node app, but let's just pretend I don't own the Node app. It's some third party, mytodolist.com, and I just want to provide a bridge to be able to talk to it. So I have this deployed app. GB Mongo list, and I've created a custom API that is using the Mongo driver, which I've installed through NPM, because that's not built in the box. So if we take a look here at GB Mongo list, you can see my service, and you can see I have an API here. And this one is actually using multiple scripts. So the main script for the API is called TaskList.js. And what you can see that it's using, it's not using directly the MongoDB module. It's using Mongoose. Mongoose is like an ORM kind of module that allows you to create objects and just work with, use kind of a query syntax for working with MongoDB. And here you can see that relative syntax I was telling you about where I've just split things out into a separate file rather than embedding it all. This is my task. So with Mongoose, you actually define these models and you define a schema for them so that it knows how to take the information that it's getting from MongoDB and creates for you a JavaScript object. So I've registered with Mongoose this task model. And then what I'm doing, right now I've just made a simple API that just gets everything, just to show that this is possible. And what it's going to do then is talk to that MongoDB instance and return all those tasks. So the task that I just added, for example, should show up. But it also does have an ability to do filtering. I'm not doing the filtering here. So, that guy is called GB Mongo List. And it should be azure-mobile.net/API/task-list, I think. I may have done it wrong, but let's see. And it shouldn't look pretty. We should just get back a JSON. Once it returns, there we go. So you can actually see all the items that have been created to date. And it's talking to the exact same database, or the same Mongo instance. And this is the kind of thing that is only possible because of the fact that I added the Mongoose module, installed it locally, added it, and committed it. Okay? Any questions on this so far? Does this seem like a reasonable scenario, something you guys might want to do, be able to talk to other kinds of databases? Okay. So that's one example. Another example would be using Redis. So I mentioned that Redis is this in-memory cache, and you can deploy it as a dedicated server. It's a very light protocol. It's very fast. It's using TCP/IP. And one of the reasons why people use Redis, you don't get the contention like you get with a database. It's all in memory, though it is a backed store. It is persistent, but it persists in the background. And so my scenario is I have a product catalog, which I've exposed as an API. So I have, it's a regular mobile service that stores some data. So I have a product table. And right now I've exposed this over HTTP. I have no front end for it, so I can easily query it. So it's GB product.azuremobile.net. And I can go to table/product. Wait, I did it wrong. What's the service? GB products. Okay. Let me see. There we go. So it's a dummy catalog, and all it has is like useless information right now. It just has an ID and a name for each item. But you could imagine, let's say, it was a million products. And so the scenario where Redis becomes really interesting is I want to start capturing stats on reads. So if I was writing that information to a database every single time somebody read, that would be an extremely expensive operation. and I'd have to deal with contention. What happens if multiple, if lots of people are reading at the same time? That's going to become a bottleneck in the database. But it doesn't for Redis, because Redis is all in memory, and it handles writing out in backdrop. So what I could do is, in my read script for my mobile service, I can actually talk to Redis and capture some information, and then I can expose those stats as separate API endpoints that I can hit. So in this case, the scenario that I wanted to support was, I want to capture how many times each product is viewed, which means I have to capture the reads, and I want to say what were the last 5 views. So at any time, I can look and get a sense of what are people looking at right now. And I could up that number, of course, to whatever I want it to be. So I do that with the Redis module. So I'm going to show you how that's done. So here is my GB products. And it will look very similar structure. I don't care about that. I'm going to have a service folder. And I have my table. So this one uses a table and an API. It uses the table for capturing the information. So up there is my Redis URL. That's the URL that I got for the VM that I've hosted within Windows Azure, which is running Redis. I'll show you that if I come up, where is it? Here, you can see I have this gblock Redis SEA. And that is a VM that I created using that script from the VM Depot website, which you can just search for VM Depot, you'll find it. And it created for me a Redis instance VM up and running. So now what I'm doing is, whenever a read operation comes in, the first thing I'm doing is say, let it go. I don't want to block the read based on the fact that I'm capturing some data. That's killer in Node, but it's killer in general because you want things to run in parallel. So up here I've required Redis, and I've created the Redis client, passing the port and giving it the URL of my Redis instance. And then what I'm doing is, so with mobile services, on the read, I can actually access information about the query that the user did. And I'm checking to see if they've passed in ID. So query, in this case, is going to give me the query string if they specified ID equals 5, let's say. So I'm accessing the ID. And if an ID was specified, so I didn't care about searches for multiple. If somebody returns 10 or 15 items, I'm not capturing that. I'm only capturing specific requests for an individual product. So I'm then calling the multi method on the Redis node module. And what that does is I can submit a batch of commands. I don't have to do multiple round trips. I can batch up. And what the batch that I'm doing here is, Redis has this notion of lists, which are really cool. So what I'm saying is, and you can think of the list as almost like a stack, which I can push things onto, and then I can trim the list as well. So I'm pushing onto that list the most, onto the recent list, the ID of the product that was viewed. And then I'm immediately trimming the list so that it never has more than 5 items in it. I could change that to 100 or 1,000. I mean, Redis has plenty of memory and it doesn't care. But whatever that number is, I can tweak it. And then the next thing I'm doing, which is really nice that Redis has, is I'm telling it to go increment the value associated with the key of the product plus the ID. And it does this in a very safe way. And if there are multiple requests at the same time, no problem. So then I'm going and executing that. And I am returning, I'm either going to return nothing, a status OK, or return an error if there was actually an error. Actually, this shouldn't work, but I haven't hit any errors, and that's why I haven't hit it. There is no console.send. That will actually fail. That should actually be request. Anyway, that doesn't matter. Okay, so that's the table. And then I have the API. So the API for recent is also going to use Redis. And this is going to query and say, get me the 5 items that are there so I can return what were the most recent viewed. And then I have a stats API. And the stats API is going to say, hey, if I give you an ID, go and tell me how many times that particular product was viewed. So to see how these actually work, and again, it's just going to be JSON, so it's not going to be that pretty. So here I have my table's product. So I'm going to change it to use API, and I'll have like stats ID equals 1. It's taking a lot of latency. Come on, you can do it. Or not. Let's try recent. Oh, I haven't seen that one happen before. Let's I think my Redis instance may be having some problems. Let's try recent. If I get an error, that means my Redis VM is having issues. But it is talking to Redis, because you can see the error. Okay. I think you get the idea of what I can do when communicating with Redis, et cetera. Of course, if the Redis instance goes down, it's not going to work. Yeah, it looks like something's wrong with the VM. I need to look at that. All right. So the last thing I want to show right before we finish is one more example, which is called GB Zumo User Service, User Voice. So we actually have a mobile services user voice. And so this was an example of where what I wanted to do was query that and expose an API. But by scraping the results of the, let me see, of this page. So it's an HTML page that I get back. And let's assume that user voice doesn't provide an API. But I want to allow somebody to be able to parse this. So what I actually have is a user voice mobile service, which was called GB Zumo User Voice. And I have a custom API there. Let's just skip over here. And that API is called IDEA. So just take a few seconds. So what you can see here is I've pulled out data from that HTML page and returned it as JSON. This is not the kind of thing that we have built-in support for doing in mobile services. How did I do that? I basically included this NOM module. And what NOM allows me to do is to give it a URL. So I've given it the URL of the mobile services forum. And then it gives me back a jQuery. It's basically giving me jQuery on the server, which is really cool. So it gives me jQuery on the server, and then what I'm doing here is I'm using jQuery, a selector, to find the actual items. And I'm creating an ideas array that I then push on the particular information that I wanted to extract from the jQuery query, and then I am sending that back. So that's pretty interesting, right? Pretty cool? Okay, we're done. So just in recap, I didn't mention our future roadmap. The main things we're going to do on the roadmap are we're going to make it so that modules automatically install. You don't have to push them with and you know into your repo. And we're going to add some better native module support. And we may have a portal experience for modules in the future. So in summary, use the modules in the box for common scenarios. Enable source control for a number of reasons, including the fact that it's going to enable you to leverage the NPM registry to do a ton of really cool stuff like I showed you today. Here's some related content. If you want to learn more about Node, you want to go to Dev 313, which is going to be on Friday, which is from my buddy Ian. And there's a bunch of other mobile services talks, some of which will overlap what we've done, but most of what I've shown will be unique from those, but they'll give you more of the basics about mobile services if you don't know what they are and what you can do with Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. I'll be around. You can find me at the booth. Please fill out your evals. Thank you guys very, very much for coming to this session.